Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
Welcome to another episode of the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Today we're having someone drop some mad science here. It's Mark Edge from Free Talk Live. How you doing, Mark?
Everything is well. You?
I'm far out and nifty. We're doing a little talk over the mumbles here. I've been pimping Mumble to everyone. It's a kind of an alternative to Skype that is more secure, and the people who run it promise not to let the government in the back door. So we're keeping the government out of our back door today. Does that feel good, Mark?
I like the idea, and I've got to say that I haven't had a lesson on Mumble and managed to click it here on Ian's computer in the studio and get hooked up to you without really any difficulty at all.
Yeah, it's actually easier than using Skype if you have a server.
Which I can only verify that.
Yeah. So talk a little about your journey to liberty, where you came from and where you're at, and then we'll talk about where you're headed.
It's kind of sad, really. I will certainly admit to being a ditto head back in the 90s and reading Imprimis magazine and that kind of thing. Coming along the way, I had a subscription at one point to National Review, and there are things that I agreed and disagreed with in the Republicans, and they certainly spoke to me on the levels of fiscal responsibility and that kind of thing. And at some point or another, I went to work for a radio station in Sarasota, Florida, actually a six radio station group, at which worked my partner, Ian Freeman. And he was a jock on a rock and roll station there. And we would...
Jock is old school term for a radio disc jockey.
DJ, yes.
He wasn't a football player who beat people up for the young.
He was just the opposite.
Yeah. You don't know what a jock is.
And he, we would talk politics type stuff and just issues just for fun during, work time rather than doing work, and had a great time. And he had mentioned that what he wanted to do for a living was be a radio talk show host. And, I kept that in the back of my mind. At some point, the station that he was on switched from rock and roll to talk, and I mentioned to the general manager that Ian wanted to be a radio talk show host, and he said to tell me to give him an air check. And I'm pretty sure I never told him to give Big Jim Davis the air check, but maybe I did. At some point or another, he approached Big Jim Davis about getting into talk, and Big Jim got an air check from him, and he did that air check with another guy, a guy named Mike at the station. And, Big Jim's like, sure, you can do Sunday night. Truly a throwaway time. Sunday night from 7 to 10 on a 4,500 watt FM station coming out of Rotunda, Florida. And we blew the phones to pieces. Ian had asked me to handle the phones, and there was another microphone there, so it went from a two-man show to a three-man show really quickly. The phones just kept on ringing, and we kept taking the calls and talking to people. I think that first night we talked about business owners having the right to allow people to smoke in their bars.
Did you call it Free Talk Live yet?
It was Free Talk Live the first night out. And the idea was always, people calling in and talking about whatever they want to talk about, callers driving the show and the content and, that kind of thing. Ian was, your average libertarian at that time, didn't have down the whole, total freedom thing going. And I was probably, the republican kind of guy. Most of the stuff I'd listened to, I got from Rush, and that made sense to me. And as time went by and we talked about more things, Ian would get farther and farther out on libertarianism, and I would at some point or another the logic would sink in for me, and so I ended up sort of following him and the callers. I'm not sure, I usually found the callers to be more convincing than Ian, but basically my politics couldn't stand the light of day of being on the radio and having people use, throwing down logic. At some point or another, you just get tired of apologizing for people that are willing to use violence to get what they want.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to, you know? I don't know. I can't say whether, you know, Liberty would work in, you know, any other given time frame or whatever, but it seems like certainly more Liberty in our day-to-day lives would be a better thing, and it would certainly work. I don't know where it would work and where it wouldn't work. And that's why I'm kind of an incrementalist in these different areas in order to, you know, find out what would work and what wouldn't work. I don't know. I mean, I couldn't tell you whether the total anarcho-capitalist agenda would work in, you know, in a society or not, because we've never had one. Seems like there's a lot of value in a lot of different areas. It seems like some things will work out. But at this point, all we've got is what Heinlein and Michael Z. Williamson writing fiction about it, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like saying in 1920, a man will never go on the moon because a man has never gone on the moon.
Indeed. You know, and I mean, this is an example that I often use with callers is, look, if you take a look at, you know, 16th century, 17th century, England or wherever, where we have the most history from. Sadly, some people write down more stuff than other people. And you take a look at and you tell these people, you went to those time frames and you told those people, hey, you know that more than one religion can exist in a given landmass? These people would have called you a popish infiltrator and hung you. I mean, they really would have done something like that. They would have used the term anarchy. And because they would have literally, they used the term social anarchy to suggest that the idea that people could have different ideas on religion in the 16th century, the 1700s, you know, they were killing people in the Salem witch hunts were about politics. They literally were killing people over these things. Take a look at what happened to the Quakers in the 1660s trying to come over to Puritan Boston. They were cutting their ears off and executing them. It was disgusting stuff. And to say now that there's no way that we could operate with, say, two different governments in a given geographic area, then, you know, it makes about as much sense as two different religions in a geographic area, I suppose.
Well, I think it basically comes down to that the, you know, the reason they won't let you pick a geographic area and declare peaceful anarchy in it is because they want to own you because they're control freaks and because they want to steal from you.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, why in the world would the farmer not let the cow go free? I mean, you know, because the farmer owns the freaking cow. The cow belongs to them. They're sure of it. They're 100% certain that's their cow and that the product of the labor of that cow, whether it's milk or pulling a plow or whatever, completely belongs to them. If they want to work that cow into an early grave, that's their right. If they want to kill it and eat it, that's their right. If they want to milk it and treat it well, that's their right. That's the way they see it, and that's the way they see you.
I'm kind of intrigued with the war on words that's going on right these days, where if you say the things we're saying, you know, they declare you a terrorist. If you say, I don't want to be owned, you know, I'm not someone who does some sovereign citizen thing where I write up some mystical words and hand it to a judge in a citizen court and pretend that's going to work. I know that's not going to work. But I can see the point of understanding that people don't have the right to own me. But when you tell the people, even if you say, I'm not going to do anything about it, I'm not going to rise up, I'm just complaining, I don't want anything to do with being owned, they talk like you are a terrorist now.
You know, I mean, if somebody was out there talking about how I don't own cows, but we were talking about the cow analogy. If they were out there talking about how my cows need to be free, at some point or another, I'm going to call that person names and a lunatic because they're trying. They're you know, they're out there beating the bushes, trying to get my cows to be no longer my cows. Of course, that person's a terrorist. I mean, I don't, you know, from their standpoint, you're advocating because it's a disagreement on property rights. You believe you own you. They believe they own you. So when you advocate for owning you, you are advocating for theft from them, from their standpoint. That person that's advocating for theft is a person who is, you know, it's a scofflaw from their standpoint, you know, a thief, a liar, treason. I mean, you know, whatever you're proposing to be free. You're proposing, you know, you're proposing violence against me. That's the way they see it.
Some people would argue, well, the cow analogy doesn't work because cows are a lower life form than people.
Sure.
People have a soul, people have free will. But actually, some of the most statist people I can think of, like Cass Sunstein, or as I call him, Ass Sunscreen, some of those people are actually advocating to appoint lawyers for cows to liberate the cows.
Sure. So,
That's weird.
I understand the, you know, and I'm torn on the whole are animals free thing. I, you know, at this point, I'm using the cow analogy because the cows are livestock and politicians believe you and I are livestock. That's what I'm trying to, that's the analogy I'm trying to hold up. I'm not entirely sure whether animals have rights, and I'm not entirely sure whether it's immoral to eat them or not. I do know that they are delicious, and you know, I would have a difficult. And I believe that you know, having eyes in the front of my head to be able to judge distance, and having pointy teeth means that I was meant to eat animals. They're not particularly pointy, but they are somewhat pointy, and so you know, I don't know what I'm supposed to do beyond my nature. And I suppose the politicians would say it's then their nature to own you.
I'm wondering when they're going to declare discussions of the non-aggression principle to be outlawed hate speech. It looks like it's headed that way to me.
I don't know. I don't know. I think that it's difficult to imagine Americans having free speech zones. In the 80s, I don't think I would have ever imagined for a second that you couldn't you know, exercise your right to freedom of speech. But along came Bush and these free speech zones, and they may very, very well have existed before. It's just not something I paid attention to. And
yeah, in the '60s, they just shoot you if you, you know, like at Kent State.
Right. Well, at least with Kent State, if you look at it from the standpoint of the oldsters, you know, those kids threw rocks. So, you know, they aggressed first. I disagree that they threw rocks because I believe history has shown that agents provocateur were rock throwers at that point. I think that the story is a little iffy because if I were an agent provocateur, I certainly wouldn't want the National Guard to be throwing to be shooting at me if I were the ones throwing rocks. But, you know, at the same whatever, it doesn't seem like shooting at people throwing rocks is really that cool. I mean, well, what did the National Guard need to be there for in the first place?
You know what Boston Tea Party says? A gun is just a modern way of throwing a rock really, really hard.
Yeah, I'm not a big believer in guns as freedom. You know, when I looked at Iraq, they had AK-47s under Saddam Hussein. You know, they had a ruler, a despotic ruler, and having a gun doesn't make one free. I suppose if you can get enough people together that you can use guns in order to make you free, that's possible. But I don't think it's possible in the United States.
Well, guns make me free. Guns make me free. I have a bunch of them. I always carry one. And, you know, I am not going to go bullet to bullet. I'm not going to go against the government with guns. It's an unwinnable battle. You know, the last time it worked was 1775, and it only worked because the government that was being fought was mostly a three-week boat ride away. That was a unique situation. Now they would just drone you, you know?
Yeah, right. I mean, and that's really what it comes down to. If you want to own a gun in order to protect yourself from a robber or something, fine. I don't know what the statistical chances are of that gun being of value in that circumstance, but you know, okay. But when it comes to the government, I don't think there's very many circumstances at all that any kind of aggression from their standpoint, what they might call aggression, is going to be of any value at all.
Well, I'd say it also goes up to the will, the amount of will that the citizens would have had in the past and their ability to sacrifice themselves and their family for everybody. I mean, up until, I'd say, last year, the Americans had enough guns that they could have repelled the government. But it was a boiling frog thing. Everybody thought, well, it may get better if we just vote or if we just wait. And I think the scale has tipped like in the past 18 months because now they can drone you. You know, right. The United States has 65,000 drones, and they're building more every day, and they can see you with them, they can hear you with them, and they can kill you with them, and they can kill you with them and take out your house without doing much damage to your neighbor. So that's that window of opportunity is closed. So I think it's
I don't know that it was ever open because you would. Well, I think it was open if you can play, you know, the general on the chessboard and you can control everybody else. But I don't think you can could have gotten enough people together because of the boiling frogs situation in order to get done what one would have needed to get done. You would have just been another mad person out there doing, you know, something violent that would have been painted crazy by the news. I mean, I don't think that there was the ability to put together the group in the same way.
I disagree, and I think there was a point, and I think it's passed, but we both agree that it's not a possibility now. And,
right.
So what is the solution? I think it's educating as many people as possible about the non-aggression principle, and that's my life goal at this point. But
can't hurt.
What do you think? What's the solution?
It certainly can't hurt. I mean, I'm a big fan of media. If you want to call it the non-aggression principle, whatever. I mean, I don't use it as a holy writ, but I do, say that. You know, what it says is good for me. I tend to try to avoid jargony speak, and I think that when people use nap, zap, and these kind of things, that it sounds a little jargony. But education's probably the only thing one can do. Mostly, you can just live your life as free as you possibly can, and weighing the risks and assessing in order to get wealthy. Because frankly, wealthy people are freer than those who aren't.
What's your How would you define your current political beliefs? I mean, I know that there's problems with names. I mean, I say I'm somewhere between, or, you know, I alternately use anarchist, anarcho-capitalist, libertarian, voluntarist, and what's the other one? Agorist, the one that sounds like a farmer. I have problems with all of those. I mean, they all work for me, but they all either, when I say them to people who don't know that much about them, you know, libertarian, they think you're a Libertarian Party member. Anarchist, right. They think you want to blow stuff up, or that you're a leftist, communist. Agorist sounds like a farmer and requires explanation. Voluntarist, people think, you know, you want to go build houses for Habitat for Humanity.
Yep.
So with or without using labels, how do you describe yourself, where you're at these days?
I do not go down the label road. I don't see much value in doing it. If you want to call me a libertarian, okay. If you want to call me an anarcho-capitalist, I'm going to disavow that term immediately. To me, it's like throwing together two really bad words, like pedo thief. I mean, to most people, it's just an ugly, ugly pair of terms.
What, anarcho-capitalist?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's two things that have negative connotations to most people.
And for one, I don't consider anarchist to be a grammatically even correct term. I mean, auto-archist, those kind of things. And I don't know that I am an anarchist. I suppose I fit into the anarcho thought in that I believe that people should be able to choose their governments. And as a result, governments will be able to compete against each other.
So you're a panarchist.
It's really right. It's a terrible word for that. Sounds like another terrible word, right? So I don't use that one either.
To me, sounds like an anarchist who has sex with everybody.
There's a polycentrist is another term, but also sounds kinky. I mean, right now you're not meaning anything, in the realm of not meaning anything. So I just choose not to use any of these terms. People can try to figure out what I am from the terms that I use, but I just think that people should stop hurting and threatening other people to get what they want.
We actually had a user question for you. The guy I interviewed on the Anarchy Gumbo podcast last week is James Davis. Do you know him?
No. Sure.
The educator runs a camp for kids that's doing really well in upstate New York. That's based on the non-aggression principle.
Tell me his name again. I want to make sure.
James Davis, and he's also a Christian.
Maybe I know his name. I was thinking of somebody else.
Okay, he's a big listener to your radio show, and he's one of the do not spank kids people. You are initiating aggression if you spank kids. And he has a kid, and he, runs a camp on this basis. And he is a fan of yours, but says he can't wrap his head around the fact that you, while in general you abide by the non-aggression principle and you don't spank your own kid, you can see how it's okay for other parents to spank their kids. And he sees that as contradictory. How do you answer that?
I have a difficult time with this particular question. First off, I think that people that are anti-spanking tend to use really slippery science. They'll find some rule, you know, some sort of systems about people that were abused, and then apply that those rules to spanking. And I don't think that that's a fair application of statistics. So, is it effective would be the question I would ask myself. And I think that it's probably effective in the short term and probably has some negative, you know, effects in the long term. I'm doing an experiment myself to see how it goes raising a kid without doing spanking, because I'm just unconvinced in one way or the other. I don't think a person can raise a child without being, you know, by the non-aggression principle. Because I don't think children fit under the non-aggression principle. I think they're closer to animals than they are to kids, to people at some point or another. In that, you know, there's times when I have wanted to change my son's diapers, and he hasn't wanted to have them changed, and I need to change them. And so they're going to get changed. And frankly, that's kidnapping. If my son wants to go outside and it's not time to go outside, or he doesn't want to go to bed or something like that, you're talking about absolute slavery. He wants to go someplace, and I'm not letting him go, physically not letting him go. So, I mean, that's slavery. You know, and what's the difference between striking your slaves and imprisoning your slaves? I don't think that there is from the non-aggression, you know, as far as the non-aggression principle goes. So I don't think it applies in those circumstances. People certainly disagree with me. Smart people like Stefan Molyneux and that kind of thing disagree with me on the subject. But I don't think you can use the, you know, I'm applying the non-aggression principle to parenting. It doesn't fit in my mind, because I can tell you that my relationship with my child at times has to be, I have to use aggression from the standpoint of, you know, if I was doing this to somebody else, it would be a crime. But because I'm doing it to my child and I have his best interests in heart, and by the way, every dictator has your best interest at heart, mm-hmm. Then, you know, it's supposed to be somehow okay. I've got to get in the car and we've got to go. You don't like it? I'm going to physically pick you up and put you in that car seat and bind you to it, because that's what it is when you click it in and he can't get himself out.
Well, with a lot of those things, it'd be considered a crime to not do them, to not change your kid's diaper or to not strap your kid in the car.
But not to the libertarians, you know, that not according to the non-aggression principle.
Let's differentiate for a minute the spanking versus the making them brush their teeth or changing their diapers.
Okay.
Let's just focus on the striking for a minute. You do not spank your kid, right?
I have never spanked my kid. I have thought about it, though.
I don't know what my question is. You had a statement. Go ahead.
Okay. So, you know, the reason that I don't do it is because it may be that the non-spankers are right. It may be that spanking has long-term, you know, sort of mental effects. It's difficult for me to imagine that's true, because the world's full of spankers and non-spankers, and I don't think that we can really show that non-spanked are more successful than spanked. But, you know, I mean, I'd love to see the science on that. I just don't know that it exists anywhere. Okay, and so that what I'm doing is I'm going by the Hippocratic Oath. You know, if I'm there to provide care for my son, then I guess I should go by this Hippocratic Oath thing, which says first, do no harm. Okay, spanking seems like the most harm one could do, besides abuse. Abuse really isn't in my playbook, so, you know, let's try moving spanking out of it. But, you know, we use other disciplinary tactics, and I've heard of disciplinary tactics that, you know, I mean, one could make the argument that it's separation from love and affection that truly warps the minds of the abused. And one could make the argument that putting kids in time out might make them feel like they're being separated from love and affection. So I don't know. That's where I'm at on this, is I just don't know. And I'm scared to death of zealots that make, you know, hard and firm statements. And by zealots, I mean Ian, who, my partner, who, you know, a lot of people who have no kids, I find it very easy to be against spanking, whereas I'd like to talk to people who have had them and managed to make it without doing it, and what kind of successes you know they've had, and you know all those things. That's where I'm looking at, and I don't find a lot of groups that are you know out there for that.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com.
So, have you ever come to fisticuffs with Ian?
No. There have been times when we have, it's been threatening, but never actual fisticuffs, no.
Are you guys friends?
It would depend on how you would define the term friend. I think that the best corollary to our relationship is brothers. We are two people who didn't particularly like each other that were thrown into circumstances based on, we were just thrown into a radio program together based on circumstances, you know, in the same way that brothers would be thrown into a relationship based on circumstances.
Do you hang out outside of work?
Yep, sure do.
Not at social functions. Like, you know, do you ever go to each other's house for dinner and not talk about work much or anything like
well,
that?
Well, I mean, Ian doesn't even have a table, and we work six nights a week together. So
why doesn't he have a table?
Because he doesn't eat at a table. He eats at his desk. I'm sitting at the place where Ian eats, really? Generally.
Is the studio in his home?
Yeah, it's in his living room. And
he eats, sleeps, and breathes radio?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's even more he's more dedicated than I am, and I can't see anybody, too many other people being more dedicated than I am. But truly, I guess he eats, sleeps, and breathes activism, and sometimes radio's activism for him. And, but yeah, we hang out outside of work. There's no doubt about it. I mean, having moved up here to New Hampshire and having gotten rid of basically, my close friends in, Sarasota, Florida, you know, Ian was to some extent my social group, but it doesn't change that, you know, I mean, our relationship is, you know, somewhat tough and involves ribbing each other on a pretty regular basis.
Huh.
Or at least me ribbing him. He's not really very good at it.
Do you think you two are going to do this radio show for the rest of your life?
I don't know what's going to happen. I worry about Ian and not paying federal income tax and what's going to happen to him as a result.
He openly doesn't pay it?
Oh, he tells people on the air that he doesn't pay it. Like, you know, they're keeping an eye on him at this point. There's no way they couldn't be. I mean, that's how he is. He's not going to do anything he doesn't tell other people to do. Not going to tell other people to do anything he doesn't do. Excuse me. And I don't know what's going to happen with him. I have no idea. I think that we bring a lot to the table. Each of us brings something to the table that's valuable for the other in the radio program. And we've done, you know, certainly done shows where it's just him and somebody else, and it's just me and somebody else and that kind of thing. And I don't know. I mean, I tend to believe that the shows with Ian and me on them together are the best programs.
Yeah.
And that, you know, separately, he's just such an extreme weirdo that people don't listen. And separately, that I am kind of this angry, pedantic individual who isn't worth listening to. But putting us together, that it, you know, it makes this, it creates a synergy and a chemistry, as they call it. And that the show really works, and it must work, because we're on more than 100 radio stations across the country and two XM channels, and have one of the most popular political podcasts on the internet, at least the free ones.
I'm pretty good with both of you. So if either of you ever bow out, I'm sending you my resume as replacement.
Okay. Well, the one thing that, you know, pretty much anybody can get, this is the thing about Free Talk Live, is pretty much anybody can get that third chair slot on Free Talk Live. All you have to do is move to New Hampshire.
Ain't happening.
See, that's the thing.
I'd have to mumble in every day.
And, you know, the way we do it is what we've come, you know, having done this for as long as we've done this, we've come to certain beliefs. Once again, I don't know what beliefs are right and which ones aren't, but we believe that being able to communicate across the table, look each other in the eye, and have our discussions that in that manner are valuable. In creating the chemistry that one needs to create for a nationally syndicated radio talk show.
You just put a blow up doll in a chair where my microphone would be, and then put a cat in front of it, and that would symbolize me.
I gotcha. Yeah, how many cats do you have, by the way?
I have three, but it feels like I have about 30 because they're always in motion, except when they're asleep on my face.
Mm, gotcha. Yep. I know that. I know you're a fan, having listened to your audiobooks and things like that.
Would that be a user's manual for the human experience?
I love that thing. I listened to it twice through with my wife before I knew anything. Like, I didn't know anything about you. Somebody just forwarded it to me, and I thought it was awesome.
Cool. Yeah, it maybe I'll use that as a blurb if I ever put it back out again. I have a blurb from the founder of the Free State Project there, who doesn't even live in your state. He lives in New York. And works for the government. But
if you want to be a college professor, it's pretty difficult not to work for the government.
I know. Well, actually, there's I have a friend in Prague who's a Fiends fan who works for the government and is a college professor. And he recently showed his whole class the movie that Neem and I made, Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, and had them all write essays on it. I can't wait. He's going to translate some of them. I can't wait to read them.
I can only imagine.
Well, Czech Republic is actually a country where you can own a gun, and people smoke weed everywhere. So, you know, they may not hate it.
May very well. It's difficult to know as a chauvinistic American, not knowing that much about the world and individual countries. They just all seem so tiny over there, and you never know what different ones of their countries allow.
Yeah. Czech Republic's a pretty hip place. I've been there. It's they were communist until like 1969 or so. No, 79. Okay. I forget when. And they had what they called the Velvet Revolution, which was literally a revolution without a single bullet fired, which is pretty rare in history.
Nice.
And, you know, they went from communism to, kind of democratic European socialism, which is a huge jump of freedom. I mean, it's probably as much of a jump of freedom as it would be for us to go to anarchy. And, so it was kind of like letting everyone out of a cage into freedom for a while. And now they're incrementally trying to, put a cop on every corner there like they are in most of the world. And people noticing it, so they're very aware of freedom issues there.
Yeah, it's really the conundrum of government, because people believe you've got to have it, and at this point, there's really no evidence to the contrary. The governments tend to grow. I can't remember what the Madison quote is precisely, but I'll do my very best, that first you must create a government powerful enough to control the governed, then you must oblige it to control itself. And if you do that, then how do you oblige it to stay the same size in that it controls the governed and controls itself? And at this point, hasn't worked.
Madison wrote up a bunch of rules for doing that, and I think they didn't word them clearly enough. I mean, I genuinely believe the Second Amendment meant you can have the same guns the government has, and if they get out of line, you can shoot them. I mean, if you read things by Madison, that's what he meant by it. We have an ongoing joke on Freedom Fiends that they should have included hassle doctrine, which is if the government hassles you, you can shoot them. I really believe that's what they meant by the Second Amendment. Of course, if you say that now, an NRA person will tell you to shut up, and a gun hater will tell you to shut up and call you a terrorist and call DHS on you.
Yeah.
I think that's what they had in mind.
I don't know what they had in mind. When I look at what Washington did during the Whiskey Rebellion, I don't see a lot of opening for having shot Light Horse Lee's men there, having been okay. I mean, they darn sure executed those people that wanted to keep the profits of their labor, or at least a couple of them. So I think that they tried to make a compromise. That compromise was the Constitution. I'd be willing to, if somebody wanted to make a compromise with me for more freedom, I'd be willing to do that. I think you could take the United States government model and say that, okay, we're starting over, and instead of getting a majority of representatives and senators to vote on things, we need to get a unity. You have to get 100% of them to vote on something. And then at that point, perhaps you would find that that only the good laws would get through, ones against murder.
That's what Ron Paul wants to do. And as an anarchist, I don't vote, but Ron Paul is one of the greatest philosophers of my time, and I love everything that comes out of the man's mouth. it's really hard, apparently, finding true blue Americans who really want to act like true blue Americans. I would say Ron Paul acts like a true blue American in the original constitutional Bill of Rights sense. And people who wave the flag from the left and the right think he's nuts. And if you talk about him, they think you're nuts.
Indeed. I don't know how to solve, you know, I don't know how to solve the Ron Paul problem. I guess he's probably the most successful thing to hit the liberty movement, though, in my lifetime, and maybe in all our lifetimes, in the last two centuries. I don't know. If you take a look at what happened from 2008 and the success they had in 2008 to 2012 and the incredible success they've had there, you know, I mean, one almost could believe that Ron Paul might get elected if he were, instead of being 72 or whatever age he is, he was 52, that he might be elected as president at some point just because of the tremendous amount of support they've had all along. Now, many people will rightly point out that, hey, if he does get elected, he's just going to inherit a terrible economy and then have to try to turn that around. And frankly, there's some bad medicine that needs to be taken in order to turn this economy around. So, you know, does one want to wait until the Republican has to take the bad medicine, the Democrat has to take the bad medicine, or do they want to get in the liberty-oriented guy in there to take the bad medicine? I don't know.
I think that his age is just an excuse. Gary Johnson is about 52 and talks a lot of the same talk that Ron Paul does, but, you know, people marginalize him even more than Ron Paul.
Well, I supported Gary Johnson for 2012, and he, for whatever reason, couldn't get the traction. You know, I can't even speculate as to why he didn't get the traction.
Well, he's not as clear of a speaker as Ron Paul, in a way.
Okay. I think that he kind of was somewhat wishy-washy in some of the more staunch libertarian types. For one, he was running against Ron Paul, right? So that's pretty rough. Maybe he would have had half the support that Ron Paul had, which would have been a tremendous amount of support if Ron Paul wasn't running.
We'll see, because Ron Paul is retiring from politics. He's obviously not going to win the presidential election, and he is retiring after that. So there will be room for someone like Gary Johnson to test the waters. We'll see what happens. I think they're just, you know, I mean, the government sends, different government agencies send out newsletters to their subordinates now saying, Here's a list of people you should pull over. And one of the things is, you know, people with a Ron Paul bumper sticker or a Libertarian Party bumper sticker.
Yeah. Yeah. They do just that. I don't know whether Ron Paul's going to win this election or not. I mean, I see so much good news coming out of the Daily Poll. I don't know how much of it is just, you know, wishful thinking and how much of it is, you know, possible. I have no idea. But
in Wyoming,
I hope I'm the best.
Did you hear about what happened here in Wyoming?
Regarding the Republican convention?
Yeah. Yeah, they did things that are, to keep Ron Paul out, they did things that are at best violations of the GOP bylaws and at worst illegal fraud. I mean, they had delegates voting twice. They were not counting Ron Paul delegates. I did an interview on Anarchy Gumbo a few weeks ago with a longtime Wyoming Republican GOP national delegate who was there, who's a Ron Paul supporter, and told me everything that happened with that. And that's been happening a lot everywhere too, that kind of stuff.
Yep, sure. You know, and I mean, if one can at the very least point out that they'll lie, cheat, and steal in order to keep their positions, one's done something of value. You know, I mean, sitting around and saying they'll lie, cheat, and steal in order to keep their positions really hasn't helped the American public up to this point. I mean, frankly, politician is synonymous with thief and liar, but it doesn't matter.
Even with people who believe in the state.
You know, it is. Yeah, absolutely it is.
I've been hearing jokes like that from Republicans and Democrats since I was a kid.
One thing they've managed to do very successfully, and I don't know what, you know, I don't know why or how or what, is to paint the term anarchy as chaos and the ideas as chaos. Now, like I said, I don't like this term or anything like that, but there's a lot of clear, precise, and right thinking that goes behind anarchist thought out there. And it is, in many cases, just unassailable. And people won't assail it. They won't even assail it. They'll just, you know, make ad hominem attacks or dismiss the points that are made or whatever. I mean, it's amazing. I'm sure you've gone online and attempted to convert somebody to the ideas of liberty on some kind of message board and seen how disingenuous and slippery people can be on the internet. I mean, it's just incredible.
Yeah. My favorite demonstration of the differences of the word anarchy, and it's a very positive demonstration of it, comes from The Simpsons. It's when Bart is running for class president and he's running against Martin Prince, who's the really status square, you know, upstanding kid. And Martin has a slanderous sign he's holding that says, "A vote for Bart is a vote for anarchy." And then Bart is also holding a sign that says, "A vote for Bart is a vote for anarchy," and smile.
It's pretty funny. I mean, you know, but I don't know. I mean, it's so difficult to try to figure out. It's, for one reason, it's the one reason I try to avoid online conversations with people, because they, you know, just will be disingenuous. Look, if you want to have a conversation with me, I'm on 3 hours a day, 6 days a week, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern time. Call this telephone number and let's just see how articulate you are. You know, and otherwise I don't want to play the back and forth, ping pong game that is online message boards. It just doesn't seem worth it.
Yeah. I think that Ron Paul is, when he retires from politics, he's going to come out as a full on anarchist, because he's been saying a few things in some of the Republican, debates that point that way to me.
He's really close. I would say that I do not think that that you were saying that his age isn't an issue, but I was thinking when you said it that, you know, he would be the oldest president, person elected to the office.
It's an issue, but it's been an excuse too.
I would agree with that. And another thing that's difficult.
Libertarians are healthy. Libertarians live a long time.
not all of them. Plenty of them smoke. It's hard not to find me. Old smokers.
I used to smoke, but I'm enjoying a Vaporsmith's electronic cigarette.
I there you go. I think that you'll have a much better life, much longer life as a result. I don't know. The science isn't there yet, but it seems like when you consider the difference between inhaling cigarette smoke and inhaling, the Vaporsmith's e-cigarette, well, one probably is going to be more better for you than the other.
I feel better. I've been on these for 4 months and off cigarettes for 4 months, and I feel better. I sleep better. I breathe better. I make love better. It's all better, man. It's all good.
Did you go cold turkey, as it were? Or, I mean, I'm not sure how one would refer to this the system, but did you stop cigarettes immediately or what?
I tried doing both for a day, and it kind of was like an overwhelming amount of nicotine. I couldn't gauge it, so I just got the right amount. So I, you know, once I got my first shipment of them, I still had about 5 packs of cigarettes left. I just set these down and finished the cigarettes and then started these. And there have been... I've smoked about 2 packs of cigarettes in the past 4 months. I can't say I've been completely off. And there are a couple times when my shipment was late because I forgot to order it late and, you know, didn't want to go without nicotine. So bought a pack of smokes and actually like didn't feel good the next day physically from the smoke. I was like, you know, kind of like body toxic, and then went back down the Vaporsmiths when I got them and felt great.
Yeah, I remember when I would, go out and drink beer and smoke cigarettes, in the evening, and that's how I would feel the next day. It, you know, just proof positive to me they're not good for you.
Yeah, they're not good for you. They're trying to outlaw them here in Casper in public places, which is, I'm amazed that they're getting traction with it.
I haven't had too much luck with, well, you know, I mean, the reason is that nobody wants to be around the darn things. I think everybody has the right to... you know, allow smoking in their business if that's what they want to do. But, you know, frankly, I've been in restaurants where, you know, trying to eat in a breakfast in a diner where, you know, somebody's smoking a cigarette two stools over, and it's not particularly pleasant experience eating my eggs with the cigarette smoke, wafting upward into my nose and that kind of thing. I just don't enjoy it. So I can see why people want to use the force of government in order to get it done, but they understand the force of government differently than I do. They just want to get what they want.
Yeah. It's amazing to me how many people don't understand that there's a gun under that pile of papers with every law.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do understand it. A lot of people who are activists, I think, really do understand it. You know, activists for nanny crap want to force stuff down people's throats and understand that they're going to get the government to, you know, close down businesses and arrest people if they get their way.
Yeah, destroyed people's lives and livelihoods, and you know, really could care less because they don't have to see it.
Yep.
That's how it goes.
How long can we go here? Right up until the hour, or do you have to do something to get ready for your show?
I've got about, let's call it 5 minutes.
All right. You've got 5 minutes. Give me 5 minutes of your brilliance on any subject you want.
You know, I so often, this is, you know, one of the difficulties of being a talk show host is, you know, I mean, I usually work off of other people. We bring in stories and we, you know, talk about those things, or people call in and talk about what they want to do. So it's much more of a reactive job than a proactive job. And people will ask me to do speeches and that kind of thing. And you know, I'm as upset doing the idea of doing public speaking as anybody else is, and people really don't consider that to be an issue, because I sit behind a microphone in a room with you know, some guy I've known for years, and you know, maybe some other person. Somehow I'm qualified to do public speaking.
Okay, I'm so talking. You want a tough question.
I'm just talking about what it's like to be a talk show host. But go right ahead.
Okay, well, one thing that I ask everybody about on the Anarchy Gumbo, on the Gumbos, that a lot of people don't ask people about, I ask people about guns, we've already covered that, and I ask people about sex. What do you think about consensual couples spanking each other in bed and having really rough sex and doing things that, you know, could be considered assault outside of the bedroom with non-consensual people? Do you think there's something wrong with people like that?
Do I think there's something wrong with them?
Yeah.
I don't know if there's something wrong with them. I wouldn't propose to know whether there was something wrong with them or not. I think that's
excellent answer, sir.
I wouldn't know whether, I just wouldn't know. You know, I mean, for me, if sex is taking you longer than 20 minutes, you're probably doing something wrong. But, you know, that's just my opinion on the subject. You know, let's make sure everybody gets one for them and then we can all take a nap. Right. And that's the way I see it. But, you know, people have different thoughts on the matter. Some people talk like if a woman doesn't have five orgasms, you haven't properly serviced her. I don't know. I mean, I've never been with that lady, but whatever. You know, and, you know, they'll do all the dress up thing and that kind of stuff. And it's not my life. It's not how things go for me.
It's a good answer. I say it's a good answer because it's usually people either answer one or two things to that question. They usually say, oh, it's great, that's what I'm into. Or they say, no, that probably means you were abused as a child and need years of therapy, which is kind of what Stefan Molyneux said when it came up. And he actually, I argued with him on it. I said, you know, you're basing that on misinformation. Let me send you a reading list. And apparently he read the list, because in a recent interview he did, he out of nowhere was talking about the problems with spanking children and how it's aggression, and then said, you know, but the exception is if it's adults in a consenting relationship, that's fine. And then went back to what he was saying about kids. And I was like, wow, I made a difference.
And you know, talk about a guy who's, you know, important in the liberty movement. Stefan is, and he approaches every portion of life and really puts out a pattern for people by which to live. And I think that's great. But at the same time, I can see why people might apply that to the cult mentality. I mean, if you're giving somebody the best way to live, then it very much sounds like you're prescribing to them how they should live. And like, it's a really fine line. You know, my wife and his wife get along great, and I love the guy and all that stuff. But at the same time, I just don't get involved in people's personal lives, mostly because it just doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. I think he's one of the most brilliant people around, which was why it seemed important to me when he said something that I knew to be absolutely wrong to, I don't know if correct him is the word, but to say, hey, you know, take a look at this other stuff.
No, and the important thing to consider is, you know, he certainly is brilliant, and brilliant people make mistakes. I know, because I am one, and they, you know, they can't be right on everything every time. I wouldn't propose to know whether, that's the case or not. I haven't studied it.
That's why I liked your answer better than his answer. His answer seemed like, I need to have an answer for something, and I'll give you the one I have based on wrong information. And your answer is, I don't know.
Just don't know. Yeah. I mean, I've always wondered, there was an episode of Sex and the City, which I found interesting. I believe the boyfriend was a politician, and he suggested to the attractive blonde girl that dates Matthew Broderick, whatever her name is. And I'm bad with these names. that she take him in the shower and pee on him. And I just wonder, how do these conversations come up? How does somebody who likes particularly kinky kink, like, you know, there's all kinds of, for 10 people out there that spank, there's one out there that wants, you know, like cutting, or wants to wear a diaper, or, you know, it gets weirder and weirder as things go by. And how do these folks meet each other? Where do they come up with this stuff?
I don't know.
I don't either. Hey, I know you hosted a popular kink podcast. Did you just happen to meet DJ, a lovely lady who liked the DJ, same stuff you like?
Yes, sir.
Did you ever like getting peed on?
I have enjoyed it upon occasion.
How did we meet each other? He wants to know.
On a kink website.
What was it called?
Bondage.com.
All right. Go back in your room, baby.
All right. So there's your answer, I guess. I don't know.
It would be the most effective way, it would seem to me. But yeah. People before the internets were spanking each other, and I just wonder how they met.
Through magazines and clubs. But, you know, a lot of times it was like places you'd get arrested for going. So
I see.
Thank God for the internets.
I got to wrap it up now.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael W. Dean.
Are you blushing?
Nah.
I wasn't trying to make you blush. I just had the answer to your question, at least
very good.
One person's answer to the question on hand.
I almost, you know, I've certainly heard of the websites. I just wonder, I don't know. I guess it's an entirely different experience for me. I've never gone on a website trying to find dates particularly. And therefore.
Me neither. And, you know, she and I live 30 miles apart, but never would have met each other without the internet. So thank God for the internets.
Indeed.
It's been good having you on. Thanks for chatting. And
thank you.
Worms.
Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiend show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.fm streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends' weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
6 drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com. All with a rotating guest on a spit, barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.